From Radio Sausalito in beautiful Sausalito, California, I'm Mitchell Field, and you are on the Field Trip. Welcome to The Field Trip, a few minutes of conversation each week with some of the most interesting people in the Bay Area and Marin County. I talk to artists and writers, actors, directors, musicians, some of the characters who make the Bay Area a fun and a fabulous place to live. So let's get right to it. My guest on today's Field Trip is Michael Ray Wisely. Wisely is well known to Bay Area theatergoers, having appeared for decades in productions in all the major houses in the area. He starred and guest starred in television movies and series, including hosting a show called Home Transformations on the DIY Network. In addition to his work as an actor, he shares the helm of a new Bay Area independent production company, 3.5 Egos. In 2011, while appearing in To Kill a Mockingbird, one reviewer said this about Wisely. The district attorneys played by Michael Ray Wisely, who looks like a cracker prosecutor, and with his nasty good looks, he should be in the movies. Well, he is, appearing in the soon-to-be-released feature film Torn. Right now, you can see Michael Ray Wisely in the fine satire The Arsonists, directed by the award-winning Mark Jackson at the Aurora Theater in Berkeley. The play, inspired by the communist takeover of Czechoslovakia in 1948, is an absurdist allegory which satirizes the way people can be manipulated into accommodating their own destruction. Sounds heavy, right? Well, it's quite funny. Please welcome to the Field Trip, Michael Ray Wisely. Welcome,
hey,
Michael.
Hey, Mitchell. Thanks for having me on the Field Trip to talk about The Arsonist.
Sure, man. Thanks for coming on. Well, look, I've seen you in a lot of plays, and often you play the charming, dapper, upper-crust type of guy. So I've got to admit that I wasn't really prepared for your entrance in this show the other night. Talk a bit about your character in the play, and also about the look that the costume designer Christine Crook has got you in for this role.
Yeah, I imagine a lot of people aren't going to be ready to see me this way. You know, I was really happy to be asked to do the show, to collaborate with Mark Jackson on this. And I actually originally went to the audition thinking I was going to be auditioning for Biederman. And Tom pulled me aside and said, "No, I want you to audition for Schmitz." And I really didn't see myself as Schmitz, the wrestler. But what I did do was, once I found out I was going to be cast as it, I just started hitting the gym so that I'd be ready to look like a wrestler. And then Christine Crook, she put me in a wrestler's outfit. And then we had to decide how to make myself look as big and as frightening as possible. So she just messed up my hair, and I grew a big, giant kind of turn-of-the-century, you know, circuit strongman mustache. Yeah, and that was kind of a collaboration between myself and Mark Jackson and Christine, and it all kind of came together. I'm really, really happy it did.
Yeah, you look great. You have the big wide belt on, like the strongman in the circus, and it was very different to seeing you in, for example, Heartbreak House a few years ago.
An upper crust twit, basically.
Yeah, and very well, if I might say.
Well, thank you.
Let me ask you this. The Arsonists is the third absurdist play I've seen on stage this year. I saw Godot, I saw The Chairs, and now The Arsonists. Have you got any idea why absurdism is a hot topic right now? Or maybe it's just a coincidence. What do you think?
You know, I had to ask myself that same question. I think things always go in cycles. But I think one of the cycles that's happening now is, you know, we've just come out of, I guess we haven't really come out of, but we've come out of an economic downturn, and we've been at war for 10 years. And I think there's always a return to something that's not familiar, something to shake us out of our normal pattern, you know. And I think The Arsonist and a lot of the absurdist plays that are being done have something to do with that.
Well, talk about the play a little bit. You know, you burst onto the scene into this poor man's house, right?
Right.
Explain what you're doing there and kind of what the setup is.
Well, okay, so the setup is Biederman is a, and I almost said his other name, Gottlieb was what his name was in Biederman and Firebugs, but here we call him Jeffrey. Jeffrey Biederman is a wealthy bourgeois businessman who probably has never really had to scratch for anything in his life. And he holds, a certain set of morals and opinions that are born out of that type of lifestyle. And he's just been reading the newspaper and talking about how somebody has let another arsonist in their house and how it's ridiculous, how they come in and they ask for a place to stay for the night and they get offered a room up in the attic, and then boom, they blow everything up. And he says it in a way that says that it will never happen to me. I would never do that. And the next thing you hear is me coming and inviting myself
right
into his house.
This dressed as a wacky circus strongman.
Dressed as a wacky circus strongman.
With your hair all in the air.
Exactly, looking like I've been sleeping outdoors for a
yeah, exactly.
Days. And I think that kind of gets to the heart of the play, which is really about the sticky nature of moral absolutism. You know, once you think you have it figured out and you feel like your morals are the standard, how you can be blindsided by reality, and or how you can participate in your own demise because you have a moral elasticity, you know, or a moral arrogance that says that can't happen to you.
Now, let's say who the actor is that plays Biederman.
Yeah, oh, well, that's the fabulous Dan Hyatt.
Dan Hyatt, he is very good.
He is a great actor, a great guy to work with.
And you have a compatriot in the show.
Yeah, this will be my third time working with Tim Niffen, and he plays Eisenring, who's basically, we are the yin and yang of evil. He's dressed as a waiter, and he has all the congeniality of a well-bred man. That's one of the things that he actually talks about this. His character Eisenring talks about this in the play, and how there are a couple of ways people can manipulate other people. One of the ways is the way that my character does, which is, oh, I'm poor, poor me, you know, feel sorry for me. And the other way is to tell them the absolute truth.
Well, Tim does a great job. I had him on the show recently, and he's wonderful in this show. In fact, the two of you have some of the best hair in theater right now.
We're hair actors.
You are. There were hair bands in the 80s. This is the era of the hair actor.
Well, luckily, I have plenty of it. So.
You certainly do. The two of you are quite hirsute. Tell me this. I know that you're a big Anglophile, and because of a lot of theater you've done, you spent some time in London last year living there with the family. Do you think there's a big difference between the theater in London, theater in the U.S.?
Wow.
Big question.
You know what? It is a big question, and I will say that I still think there is, and I think one of the reasons is, number one, I believe theater is much more supported and dare I say, respected. Language in general, I think, is more respected as a whole, by a nation in Great Britain. Not to say that it isn't here, but it's just a little bit more supported there, and it doesn't have to do with the almighty dollar so much. And because of that, whenever I was there, I lived in London on Spring Street for about 2.5 months in 2011, and I was able to go to, several of the theaters. The National, I went about 8 times, and what I noticed most is that I saw theater there, and I mean just regular stage plays, with 27 actors, and it wasn't a musical. They all dealt with great ideas. Not all the plays were great, but they all had potential to be great, and they all stretched, and I think where theater is under-monetized, like it is in the United States, even in the bigger markets, sometimes people cannot stretch. Sometimes it's only the really poor companies that can stretch it, which is very odd, which is a very funny thing to say, but the companies that don't, have to make the nut every month can stretch and do more exciting stuff. And I think, on the other hand, theaters like Aurora can also stretch and do some pretty exciting things, which I think Tom Ross has done a great job of doing at the mid-level that Aurora's at.
Yeah, they do some terrific work for a Bay Area company. I guess in England, there's no stigma for an actor to do theater and do film and do commercials and do TV and then go back to theater, and nobody thinks less of them because they did TV. I know there's a great line in the play I Hate Hamlet where the director tells the guy, "Listen, baby, theater is for British guys who can't get a TV series."
That's right. I actually played that character one time.
Did you really?
Yeah, Gary Peter Lefkowitz.
Give us the line.
Well, let's see. What is one of the things he says? One of the funniest things he says is he goes, you're going to be doing Shakespeare in the park? That's not even real theater. That's snack theater. That's Shakespeare for squirrels. You know, what do they sell? Mostly Mozart tote bags, little bags of nuts and raisins. It's a very funny play. I would also say, you know, I'd also have ventured to say, I mean, as far as about the stigma, you know, I went to see Ray Fiennes play Prospero. And, you know, there's definitely no stigma. You can jump around anywhere you want to in Great Britain as an actor. And I think, quite frankly, Michael Caine taught us that there is no job that you can say no to.
Well, that's certainly true in his case. They say that if you look at people's bar mitzvah videos, Michael Caine actually appears in some of them.
It's so funny to have seen him in such appalling things and see him in fantastic things. And he's still doing the same job. He's still great.
Well, let me ask you, what's another favorite role that you've taken on?
I tell you what, I really loved one of the shows I did, The Aurora, several years back. I did it with Julian Lopez Marias and great James Carpenter, a play called Harold Pinter's The Birthday Party. And I really enjoyed playing the Irish thug that is McCann in that. I have to tell you, there's real parallels between that and The Arsonist for me as far as in the track of my character.
Well, you don't get to play the bad guy that often, do you?
You know, it's very funny. In the Bay Area, in some theaters, I am the good guy, and in some theaters, I'm the bad guy. And that's just fine.
Well, I tell you what role I love you in is the one in The Christmas Carol.
Oh, out at, I play Christmas Present out at Center Repertory. You know, to a confetti cannon and loud music. You know, I've loved doing that, and now my family's in it with me, which is a big bonus around the holidays. Yeah, my 10-year-old daughter, this will be her sixth year this year. They've asked my wife back, and that'll be her fifth year, I believe, and this will be my 12th year.
Excellent. Hey, that's a nice little job for Christmas, right?
It is, and we get to be together, and I have to tell you, there is no story that has more heart and more love in it than A Christmas Carol. Just like all great language plays, I think, endure. The Shaw, the Shakespeare, the Chekhov, the Max Frisch, the Pinter. I have to tell you, one of the things that I really said to myself many years ago whenever I decided to make theater one of my mainstays and to really go that route was that I just want to do language plays. I want to do great language, and I want to try to deliver that language in such a way that it can touch other people's lives.
Well, I'm having so much fun chatting with Michael Ray Wisely. I think I'll make this into a two-part show. I hope you've enjoyed this week's, and the next part will be up next week. In the meantime, don't forget that Michael can be seen at the Aurora Theater in Berkeley. Incidentally, it was voted the best Bay Area theater company in 2012 by the San Francisco Weekly. They continue to host The Arsonists through May 12. For more information, please go to auroratheater.org. Well, thanks for joining me today on The Field Trip. I welcome your views and comments on the show, as well as your suggestions for future guests. My email address is mitchellfield@radiosausalito.org. The theme music you hear behind me is the tune Superjet, with the fabulous marine sax man Noel Jukes up front. It's from the recording The Noel Jukes Quartet featuring Matt Clark. Please remember that The Field Trip can be heard Wednesdays at the top of every hour at 1610 on your AM radio dial in Southern Marin, countywide on Wednesdays at noon on cable channel 26, anytime on your computer at radiosausalito.org, and 24 hours a day as a free podcast from the iTunes Store. If you liked today's show, please tell your friends, and if you didn't, well, please tell your enemies. So till next time, this is Mitchell Field saying goodbye, good luck, and see you next week.